son-in-law is gone, his two daughters are gone, his 12 grandchildren are gone, along with their other servants and large flocks and camels and donkeys. And so here it is, after Laban travels for 7 days, he meets up with Jacob and his caravan, we'll call it. Here they are. Here's this conversation. And, of course, the night before he's going to actually talk to Jacob, you get verse 24. God came to Laban the Aramean in a dream of the night and said to him, "Be careful that you do not speak to Jacob either good or bad." And you realize, when do you typically give a warning? Usually whenever you suspect something's not going to go well, right? If you didn't give a warning, you feel like it would just go down the wrong path. God intercedes here with Laban. Then, if you notice what happens, Laban's been anticipating this conversation ever since he left Paddan Aram. And now here's Jacob, and he's about to have a conversation he might have thought he was not going to have. Then, as it comes together, he tells him all these different things. Look at verse 27. "Why did you flee secretly and deceive me and did not tell me so that I would have sent you away with joy and with songs, with timbrel and with lyre?" He says, "We'd have thrown you a big old party. You just told me you were leaving." And that's real easy to say whenever you've already left. You can make up all you want. And you'll find out real quickly here tonight, Jacob doesn't feel that that would have happened at all. Some for good reason, some for not. Then he's already told him, he says, "Why'd you take my daughters away like captives?" He doesn't realize that his daughters feel like they might as well be foreigners to Laban. He's kind of clueless in this relationship. Then notice how it continues on, verse 28. He says, "And did not allow me to kiss my sons," speaking of his grandsons, "and my daughters." He says, "Now you have done foolishly. You've been so foolish in this." Then, verse 29. "It is in my power to do you harm, but the God of your father spoke to me last night saying, 'Be careful not to speak either good or bad to Jacob.'" I want you to notice Laban comes in a little huffy puffy, doesn't he? He says, "It is within my power to do you harm." I mean, he says it flat out, and he doesn't make it sound like maybe I could do this. Remember, he's brought a pretty big group of his own kinsmen down with him on this escapade. And so here the situation is, he says, "Don't you know that I have this power?" And we talked a little bit last week about maybe this reminds you of John chapter 19, where Pilate says to Jesus, "Don't you know that I have the authority to release you or to crucify you?" And in all actuality, did he have that authority? He didn't. You start to realize, who is Pilate afraid of? He is afraid of the people. He's afraid of the Jews. And so you realize he was saying some things that really even he knew weren't true. And here's Laban, who probably still thought it was within his power. But notice this other aspect. He says, "And then the God of your father spoke to me last night saying, 'Be careful not to speak either good or bad to Jacob.'" Now, this is news to Jacob. I don't know if you've ever had a situation like this where people are talking and they're really starting to really degrade you. And then all of a sudden they make a statement about, but somebody who has much higher power than you has already spoken in a way that kind of boxes them in where there's nothing they can do about it. And you realize, I had no idea. It's not as if Jacob had any idea this is what God was going to do. And then notice how it continues on. He says, "Don't do good or bad to Jacob." He's gotten his warning. Verse 30. "Now you have indeed gone away because you longed greatly for your father's house." And you realize, is that accurate? No, not at all, because why did Jacob leave? God told him to. God told him to. And he even had a dream with an angel telling him to go back home. So, once again, you see, Laban's assumptions are not right. Just like his assumptions are not right that his daughters have been taken away and they've been made to feel like captives. No, they wanted to leave. They said, "Wherever you go, okay, it's fine with us." Then comes a surprise. I mean, Jacob's getting two surprises in a row in verses 29 and 30. Number one, that Laban had a dream. Now, number two, but why did you steal my gods? You can kind of imagine Jacob at this point going, what are you talking about? This makes no sense whatsoever. And like we said last week, if your gods can be stolen, then what good are they? Right? Now, notice how this continues. Verse 31. Then Jacob replied to Laban, Because I was afraid, for I thought that you would take your daughters from me by force. Notice what Jacob was working off of. Because God told him to go back home, but he didn't tell him, okay, you need to leave whenever Laban's not looking. So you notice Jacob's following what God said, but there was a different way to do it. He could have told Laban, look, my God said it's time to go home. Or the God of my father said it's time to go home. And then he would have dealt with the situation at hand. But notice he's motivated by fear, and that's why he leaves the way he leaves. Now, does he have any right to be fearful? I mean, think about what God's told him. You go home, I'll be with you. And even the vow that he had made before about what God had told him, he says, look, I will protect you. I'll be with you. And so many times we forget about these promises of God being with us if we'll do things his way. Then, so you see the point at hand. He says, because I was afraid, for I thought that you would take your daughters from me by force. Now, what does that tell you about his relationship with Leah and Rachel? What does he want? Does he want to leave them behind? No, he says, they're my wives. I want them with me. Chuck, I thought I saw it. Right. Right. And so you think, he sees how Laban's dealt with him, but then you go, well, where does God stand over all this? And you go, that should be what really dominates the thinking, right? Even for us. Then notice how he continues on here. He says, that's why I left in that way. Verse 32, the one whom you find your God shall not live. Well, why can Laban be so bold? Excuse me, why can Jacob be so bold? Because he's living with integrity and honesty now, right? He's really had quite a change since he left his homeland 20 years ago, where he left as a deceiver and a tricker. And you come back to here and you're going, look, let me tell you something. I didn't take your gods. And if you find them with anybody here, you can kill them. You can take their life, which tells you where he's at in all this. Now, there's something he doesn't know, of course. He says, in the presence of our kinsmen, point out what is yours among my belongings and take it for yourself. He says, for Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. He says, look, you go through everything that I have. Whatever's not mine, you can just have it. He says, let our kinsmen judge among us. He says, just bring it out here up front. We'll let your kinsmen and my kinsmen, he says, we'll let them pass judgment here and we'll see what happens. Whenever you do things in a way that has integrity and honesty, you can have a boldness, not an arrogance, but you can have a boldness to say, I know what I've done. I know how I've lived. And he's going to go on to talk about this further here in a few verses. He's saying, I've done everything above the board. We didn't take anything that wasn't ours. Of course, there's something he doesn't know, though. Then, verse 33. So, Laban doesn't say, you know, you're right. I'm sorry. I overreacted. What does he do? Well, let's start going through these tents and see what we can find. So, Laban went into Jacob's tent. Didn't find anything. Into Leah's tent. Didn't find anything. Into the tent of the two maids, Bilhah and Zilpah. He says, didn't find anything. But he did not find them. He says, then he went out of Leah's tent and entered Rachel's tent. Now he comes into Rachel's tent. Then, verse 34. Now Rachel had taken the household idols and put them in the camel's saddle. So remember, they left on camels from Paddan Aram. She's had these things for how long now? 10 days. I mean, they had a 3-day head start, then it took 7 more days to catch up with them. So she's had them, and notice, does anybody else know about them? Apparently not. And you know specifically who doesn't know about them is Jacob. So here it is. She sat on them. He says, and Laban felt through all the tent, but did not find them. Now notice, he doesn't have a flashlight, and it doesn't seem like he even has a candle or a lamp. They're just feeling their way through these tents. And don't think about, you know, a circus tent that's humongous here. The idea, they're feeling around through everything, and they've already done this in Jacob's tent, and Leah's tent, and Bilhah and Zilpah's tent, and finally come to Rachel, and here she is. And I really don't know in this next aspect, in verse 35, whether she's actually telling the truth or if this part is part of a deceptive statement. I know which way I lean, but it doesn't say. Verse 35, she said to her father, let not my Lord be angry that I cannot rise before you, for the manner of women is upon me. So he searched but did not find the household idols. So here she is, she's sitting in the tent, and she's saying, you know what, my menstrual cycle is here. Excuse me, don't be angry with me if I can't get up. And I'm sure for him, he was like, okay, that does change the scenario here. And sure enough, he searches for everywhere else, but he doesn't find them. And so here he comes out empty-handed, and he's gone through seemingly everything. Then, notice verse 36. What effect does it have on Jacob? He is angry. Because what has been called into account? His honesty and his integrity. Now, does that ever happen to us? When somebody questions your honesty and integrity and you know that you're innocent? And does anger usually help us in the scenario? No. And what something is, you know what he's about to say has a lot of validity to it, but at the same time, you know that Rachel has these household gods. And remember, what did Jacob have to say about who found them? They would die. And I want you to realize, what's going to happen to Rachel when she gives birth to Benjamin? She's going to die. And realize, that's going to really happen over the course of this trip, from what's in chapter 35. So you start realizing, it's interesting sometimes how statements just kind of get made in passing. But sure enough, it's not going to be because they go, oh, look, we found the household idols. What he said is going to happen. Now, we know eventually they're all going to die. But just kind of keep that hidden back, and we'll deal with it later on as we go. So you see what's here. Jacob becomes angry. And he contended with Laban. And think about what it means to contend. I mean, this is not some, hey, here's an idea for you. And he's going to ask 4 questions. And think about these 4 questions. And Jacob said to Laban, what is my transgression? There's question number 1. And what could Laban's answer have even been? You didn't tell me before you left? Is that really a transgression? No. He says, what is my sin that you have hotly pursued me? He says, what is so terrible that I've done to you that you have pursued me like a convict? Verse 37. He says, though you have felt through all my goods, what have you found of all your household goods? He says, where is the evidence? He says, you've looked through everything. So they even looked beyond just these tents of Jacob and Leah and Rachel and the handmaids, or the wives of Bilhah and Zilpah. And you go, he says, where is it? Put it right here in front of me so that my kinsmen and your kinsmen can see it, so that we can have an honest judgment here. Then he says, set it here before my kinsmen and your kinsmen that they may decide between us two. Now notice, who he's calling on to be the judges. Let's let our family decide. He says, let them be the judge. Then he switches gears here. Verse 38. He says, these 20 years I have been with you. Wow, 20 years. I know there's parts in our life where 20 years sounds like a long time, and there's other parts of our life where we go, 20 years sounds so quick. But no, he says, 20 years I've been with you. He says, your ewes, your female sheep, and your female goats have not miscarried, nor have I eaten the rams of your flocks. He says, look, generations have come one after another with your livestock, your animals, and your flocks. He says, there haven't even been any miscarriages, which is really amazing if you ever handle livestock or flocks. He says, nor have I eaten the rams of your flocks. I never took anything for myself. This would almost be one of those statements of, I've worked here for 30 years. I have not so much as even taken a paperclip home with me. Verse 39, that which was torn a beast, I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it myself. He says, when something died, I didn't say, well, that's just kind of part of it. He said, I took one of the patterns of the colors of the flock that I had, and I placed it in yours. I'm the one who paid the price, not you. Then he says, you required it of my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. You just assumed it was always my fault. You ever been that way in a job? Where you feel like every time there's a problem, they go, it's you. They don't bother looking for any actual details. They just assume it. And that's the kind of situation Jacob's been in. And he's been in it for more than one decade. And don't think that just started in the last few years. Because look at where he's going to go next. He says, thus I was by day, the heat consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep fled from my eyes. He said, I'm tired, I'm worn out, and out of all these things that I've done for you, how did you treat me for this kind of loyalty? He says, I stayed up at night, I was cold. I mean, can you imagine waking up in the morning and seeing frost on your clothes? Bearing the heat of the day, he says, and how did you treat a dedicated servant? Verse 41. He says, these 20 years I have been in your house. I served you 14 years for your two daughters, and you tricked me at that. He says, in 6 years for your flock, and you changed my wages 10 times. Every time the Lord blessed me, you decided to change the pattern of the flock of which ones would be yours and which ones would be mine. Eric. Jacob's 97 years old at this point. He was 91 whenever Joseph is born, and this is 6 years later. So he's 97. So here he is, and you think 10 times you changed it. Think what that would do to you as a laborer. Every time you're going, you know what, we're supposed to get double pay for holidays, and we get time and a half for overtime, and then they go, oh, you know, we see that you're putting in 55 hours a week, and we're just going to change that. There's no more double overtime. I'm sorry, no. We're not even going to pay you extra on holidays anymore. You go, but I'm working for the Lord, and I'm doing what's right with honesty and integrity, and this is what I get. I mean, can you understand the frustration of Jacob? I mean, just whenever he thought he had a 10 days lead away from there, all of a sudden, here's Laban and his kinsmen. Accusations, look through everything, find nothing. Then, verse 42, if, and look at the way Jacob poses this, if the God of my father, once again, he doesn't say my God. He says, if the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac, we'll deal with the fear of Isaac when it shows up next. He says, had not been for me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the toil of my hands, so he rendered judgment last night. He says, if it had been up to you, I would have left Haran or Paddan Aram empty-handed. And he says, even though you pursued me, God rendered his judgment. And what was the judgment? Don't say anything good or bad to Jacob. Now, you start reading through this telling of the story. I'm not so sure that Laban did a great job of following what God said. I don't know about you. But you see this picture laid out, and to go, if this wasn't for the God of my father, Jacob, and the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac, he says, you would have taken everything. Don't tell me you would have thrown me a big party. I mean, he's really laying it out there. He's not saying, well, I'll let you get away with that thought. He says, you know it wouldn't have been that way. How about you be honest? Well, look at what's going on inside of Laban in this moment, and you realize Jacob's probably right. Verse 43. Then Laban replied to Jacob, the daughters are my daughters, and the children are my children, and the flocks are my flocks, and all that you see is mine. What does Laban think about all this? He knows it's right. If God wouldn't have warned him in the dream, what does this tell you the way he saw everything? It's all mine. He says, your wives, they're mine. The grandchildren, they're mine. He says, the flocks, they're all mine. Whew. He says, but what can I do this day to these my daughters and to their children whom they have born? He says, but what can I do now? Sure enough, if God wouldn't have stepped in, would this story have a different continuance? It certainly sounds that way, doesn't it? Isn't it amazing how the Lord's timing is perfect? He didn't come to him right as soon as Laban left and to forget it. He waited till he gets right upon where they're camping on the same mountain on different sides. He says, you just remember. Not good or bad. Be careful. I tell you, whenever parents tell their kids to be careful, that's where you sure better listen. Now, notice how it goes from here. Verse 44. Here's where you start to see this change for Laban. Now is where you're going to see this difference maker. So now come, let us make a covenant. Make a covenant. This is a big turn. He says, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me. Then Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. Now, have we seen Jacob set up a stone as a pillar before? And you remember what he did with it? He poured oil out on it, right? You notice there's not any oil on this one? Why do you think there's not any oil on this one? This is not rejoicing and gladness. This is just a covenant. Now, he says, verse 46, Jacob said to his kinsmen, talking to his own family, he says, gather stones. So they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there by the heap. Now, I don't know in your mind how many stones it takes to have a heap, but it just says they heaped up these stones around this bigger stone that they set up as a pillar. And you'll see there's a reason for that here in a second. And then notice this little tag at the end of verse 46. And what do? They ate. They ate. He says, and they ate there by the heap. Okay. Well, he'll explain that more here in a minute. Verse 47. Now Laban called it Yager Sehadutha, which is Aramaic, by the way. He says, but Jacob called it Gilead, or we think of Gilead. And, of course, that's Hebrew. Yet both of them mean the same thing. They both mean, in their own respective languages, heap of witnesses. Or, as we might say, instead of heap, a pile of witnesses. You know, if you're if your mom ever got to where she just wanted to cook a good breakfast on Saturday morning, she makes a heap of pancakes, you go, that's nice. But here's a picture of how many witnesses are there? A heap of them. It's not just one, two, or three, because think about how many people are there you know by name. You know the four wives by name. You know Jacob by name. You know 12 children by name. And you know Laban by name. And you know the kinsmen that came with him. You don't know their names. There's other female and male servants that came with Jacob and his caravan. And you're going, there's a pretty big heap here of witnesses. So he says, here's what we're going to call it. And so Jacob calls it Galeed. Verse 48, Laban said, this heap, this pile, is a witness between you and me this day. Therefore, it was named Galeed. And, of course, it's using the terminology of Jacob. But notice how it continues. There it was named Galeed, verse 49, and Mizpah. Now, Mizpah is the word for a watchtower. And I want you to see the way Laban talks about God. This is kind of curious. For he said, may the Lord, and notice, Lord in all caps, may the covenant God watch between you and me when we are absent one from the other. What does Laban recognize about God's ability? He sees it all, whether we can see each other or not. He knows what's going on. And then you'll see why he brings this up. Verse 50. Here's part of what this covenant is. If you mistreat my daughters, or if you take wives besides my daughters, although no man is with us, see, God is witness between you and me. He says, there's one thing, and this is so unique, because the daughters don't really feel like Laban thinks that highly of them. They said it earlier in the chapter. Yeah, we might as well be foreigners. The way that dad kind of treats us now. And yet he wants to make this covenant to say, you better not mistreat Leah and Rachel. And you better not marry any other women, which I tell you, talking to a 97-year-old, that doesn't seem like, don't you be marrying anybody, Grandpa. Now, you look at this and you see this statement come together and he continues on here. And he says, because God's going to be a watchtower and he'll be the witness, which is really something for Laban to say. Because what has Laban already recognized that God is doing for Jacob already? Protecting him. God's already a watchtower. He protected you from me, Laban. Then, verse 51. He says, Laban said to Jacob, behold this heap and behold the pillar which I have set between you and me. It's interesting. Earlier on, it talks about Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. Now, here's Laban. He can't let anything go. He says, behold this heap, behold the pillar which I have set between you and me. This heap is a witness, and the pillar is a witness, that I will not pass by this heap to you for harm, and you will not pass by this heap and this pillar to me for harm. He doesn't say, hey, you can't come and visit. It's just saying, whenever you cross by this place, whenever you're headed to see me, if you do, he says, don't come to harm me, and I won't come to harm you. So what kind of covenant is this? It's peace, right? So he says, make sure don't mistreat my daughters. Don't take wives for yourselves other than this. The Lord's going to look out and see this. Then he continues on, verse 53. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us. So Jacob swore by the fear of his father, Isaac. Now, make sure you put the family tree together here. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor. Now, Abraham and Nahor are brothers. And there's another brother by the name of Haran, and his son was Lot, if you remember how the family goes together. He says, the God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, the God of their father. And, of course, their father would be Terah, T-E-R-A-H. He says, judge between us. Now it's not about the kinsmen being judges anymore. This is about the covenant God being the judge. Because we're making a covenant here. And he's going to be the watchtower. He's going to be that is looked out after. And then notice this tag at the end of verse 53. We already saw this back in verse 42. He says, so Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. Isn't that a unique way to say it? Now let's deconstruct it a little bit. When do you imagine the most scary moment of Isaac's life was? When he's going to be sacrificed back in Genesis 22. And what was the reason that Isaac didn't die? God intervened by sending an angel to tell him not to kill Isaac. And I want you to think about that. The fear of Isaac. Whenever you think you're about to die, all of a sudden that the Lord would stay the hand of the one who's going to kill you. Think about what this covenant's about here. You don't pass by this heap of witnesses to me for harm, and I don't pass by this heap of witnesses and the pillar for harm either. But God is going to be a watchtower. And if you pass by here for harm, if you mistreat my daughters, if you go marry other women, he says, whose arm is going to be against you? The arm of the covenant God. And if you notice, it says, and Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. Who's going to enforce this covenant? Who are they asking to enforce this covenant? Let's put it that way. The Lord God, the covenant God. Now, so you see what's being brought about here. Then, verse 54. Then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain. All right, we've been through the sacrifices. Which kind of sacrifice do you think this would be? What kind of offering? Peace offering. Now, if you remember, the peace offering had three different kinds within it. Do you remember the three different kinds? Thanksgiving offering, votive offering, and a free will offering. Out of those three kinds, which one do you think this would be as a peace offering? A votive. Because votive is about making a vow. Isn't that what they're doing? They're establishing the grounds for peace. They are making a vow to God about what's going to happen. They're saying the covenant God is the one that we're appealing to oversee this covenant. So you see what's here? He says, so Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called his kinsmen to the meal. Remember what the peace offering's about? We're going to share a meal together. Now, it told you about this earlier on. If you remember back up in verse 46, it says, and they ate there by the heap. So here they are, all gathered together, all the kinsmen. Wouldn't it have been a whole lot more fun to have this party back up in Paddan Aram with timbrels and all that fun music and joy? But that wasn't going to happen without the Lord intervening, was it? So you see a bit of a picture here. Then he says, and they ate the meal and spent the night on the mountain. So here they are. And all of a sudden, verse 55, early in the morning, Laban arose, kissed his sons, really his grandsons, and his daughters, and blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned to his place. Then he leaves. Took him 7 days to get there. Seemingly, it sounds like he just spends one night after quite a conversation and making a covenant. And then it's time to head back home. Because remember what they're doing back home? Shearing sheep. So, you kind of see this picture as it comes together. I want you to think in terms of covenant. Look over at Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10. Look down at verse 28. When you start thinking through what was really being brought together about keeping a covenant, and the fear of Isaac. If you remember in the Old Testament, you can read more about it in Jeremiah. Other times where they're going to make a covenant, when you make a covenant with God, you would take the animals. You may remember this from earlier on in Genesis. Genesis 15 talks about it. When God makes a covenant with Abram, he tells him the animals to bring out, to cut them in half, lay them apart from each other. And then you walk down through the middle of them and you make a covenant with God. And sure enough, that's what God says. And God shows up in the form of a smoking oven or a flaming torch. And to walk between them. And it's the same idea of saying, we're going to walk between this. And if anything prevents me, if anything takes me away from keeping this part of the covenant, I want to be like one of these animals. I want to be killed, to die. Whenever you think about that, it means covenant's a real big deal. When you're talking about an eternal God making a covenant, saying, if I don't keep my loving kindness, my covenant love, my covenant promises, what is God saying? Then may I cease to exist. What does that tell you about the faithfulness of God? When he makes the covenant, what do you know? There is nothing that should ever make you doubt it. If your enemy says, don't you know all this belongs to me? I should destroy you. God made me a covenant. He said he'd be with me. He said he'd take care of me. Now, when we think about whenever we entered into a covenant with God, I want you to think about it. There were two dead bodies when we entered into a covenant with God. Jesus died, and whenever we were baptized together with him, what happened to us? We died. Now, we have a choice. Are we going to keep this covenant relationship with God or not? If we don't, what will it cost us? Might as well be like one of those dead animals. Now, keep on going here. That's the first bell, right? Thank you. Verse 28, Hebrews 10:28. Anyone who has set aside the law of Moses dies without mercy on the testimony of two or three witnesses. Under the old covenant, if you went against it to break the covenant, and there were two or three witnesses, had to have two or three eyewitnesses, what would happen to you? You would be taken outside of the camp or the city. The eyewitnesses would cast the first stones, and then everybody else would join in, almost like a heap of stones, right, at the end. He says, you know this is what happens under the old covenant. If you set aside the old, it will cost you your life. And it'll also cost you your soul. Then he switches over now to talk about the new covenant. Verse 29. How much severer punishment do you think he will deserve who has trampled underfoot the Son of God and has regarded as unclean the blood of the covenant by which he was sanctified and has insulted the Spirit of grace? Can you appreciate how he poses the question? He says, I just want you to think about it. He says, how much severe punishment do you think he will deserve who has trampled underfoot the Son of God? Now, under the old covenant, you died physically. What about if you forsake the new covenant? We're talking about eternally. He says, you better understand about keeping this covenant with God. We had better not take it lightly. Then he says, you've trampled underfoot the Son of God. Jesus died so that you could share in this covenant. And here you are going back to flesh and self. He says, what do you deserve? Then he goes on, he says, and have trampled, has regarded as unclean the blood of the covenant by which he was sanctified. The very blood that made you holy, you treat it like it's common. Like you can be forgiven anywhere. It's okay. No big deal. It's just a little lie. It's just a little deception. It's just a little bit of anger. He says, have you considered who you're dealing with? You made a covenant with God on His terms of peace and His Son. He says, by which you were sanctified and have insulted the Spirit of grace. You ever thought about what the Spirit of grace really is? I want you to know that under this covenant, you are forgiven so that you can get up and move forward and grow into being more like Jesus to be holy and blameless. He says, but you take grace and you just spit on it. And you say, it's okay, I'll be forgiven. It's easier to ask for forgiveness than it is to ask for permission. Just spit on him now. Because that's what we're doing if we think that way. To insult the Spirit of grace. Then verse 30, he says, for we know him who said, vengeance is mine, I will repay. And again, the Lord will judge his people, his own people. He says, the ones that made a covenant with him through his Son. And you realize in this very simply, he says, vengeance is mine. And you think about how creative God is. Whenever you think about how creative God is and think about him being your enemy, that is terrifying. Simply terrifying. And then you notice verse 31. It is a terrifying thing to fall into the hands of the living God. What did it mean for Rachel to take a bunch of household idols? Those idols weren't going to do anything to her. But who was she going to have to deal with? The God who created the heavens and the earth. The covenant God. And it's going to cost her. And you realize for us, we had better realize we're not dealing with falsities that can be stolen and taken. We're dealing with the living God. And we had better take this covenant through Jesus as serious as we possibly can. All right, Lord willing, next week, come back and hit a little bit more on Genesis. Thank you.